Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
That's why he says you did not desire, but you prepared a body for me. This is the way that fellowship that God longed for, this is the way it would be accomplished by the body that God had prepared for Jesus, whose body we know was broken.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian continues his series titled, The Story of God. Join us as Pastor Brian resumes his teaching on Exodus chapter 40, verses 1 through 16, in a message titled, The Law, a Shadow of the Good Things to Come. Now, here's Pastor Brian.
This whole system, as I said, is ultimately, these are signposts pointing on to the greater and better tabernacle, priesthood, and sacrifice. Jesus, the Lamb of God, who takes away the sin of the world. Now, as we read, the law was a shadow of good things to come. So the tabernacle. So the law is a shadow of good things to come. The tabernacle is a shadow. The tabernacle itself is a shadow of good things to come. What was the tabernacle symbolizing? It was symbolizing God's presence among his people. I mean, it was more than symbolizing it. It was actually, that's what was happening. But as we said, with the limitations. So the tabernacle, that's what it was, but it was pointing to what? It was pointing to that time that's already past, that time when God would come among his people. But it is also pointing to a future time when God will dwell among his people in the realized new creation. But listen to this. Maybe some of you know this, but I think probably most of you do not. John chapter 1, verse 14 is just one of the most profound statements in all of Scripture. And it even gets more interesting when you look at it from this point of view. So remember John chapter 1, verse 1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And verse 14 says, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. The word dwelt is a word that means pitched his tent, or using our word today, tabernacled among us. So when John pens this and he writes this 14th verse, I mean, he starts with Genesis. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. All things were created by him. Without him, nothing that was made was made. So Genesis, but then he moves into Exodus and the tabernacle. In verse 14, he says, and the Word became flesh and tabernacled among us. So Jesus is what the tabernacle was pointing toward. And guess what? Today, we have gathered here with absolute confidence that Jesus is with us. He is among us. He is among us in a way unlike the Israelites who had limited access. He is among us, offering us total and complete access. But then there was the high priest. Now, the high priest was also, a picture or a signpost of what the New Testament would refer to as our great high priest. And the New Testament, specifically the letter to the Hebrews, makes clear that Jesus is our great high priest. So the high priest was the one who could go into the very presence of God. The high priest was the one who could go into the Holy of Holies. But remember, the high priest had to take with him blood. Listen to what Hebrews 9, 11, and 12 say. But Christ came as high priest of the good things to come. Not with the blood of goats and calves, but with his own blood, he entered the most holy place once for all, having obtained eternal redemption. You see, what the high priest did every single year from the establishment of the system that we read about in Exodus 40, for the next 13, 14, 1500 years, once a year, with the exception of the captivities and the destruction of the temple and so forth. But once a year, the high priest would go in with the blood. And this was absolutely necessary. But Jesus, as our high priest, he did by one sacrifice what the high priest of Israel could never do. He has obtained for us eternal redemption. And so the tabernacle is a signpost pointing us to Christ, who dwelt among us, who pitched his tent among us. The high priest is a signpost pointing us to Christ, who came as high priest of the good things to come. But the sacrifice is also pointing us to Christ. Because, of course, Jesus, this is the amazing thing. Jesus is both the priest and the sacrifice. And verse 14 of chapter 9 of Hebrews says this, "For by one sacrifice he has made perfect forever those who are being made holy." So by the one sacrifice he's made perfect forever those who are being made holy. Notice that, perfect forever. What is this telling us? This is telling us that the way into the holiest is now available. Unlike the Israelites, who had the presence of God with them, but had limited access to God, we have no limited access. We have full access. And of course, you know, just if you want to, this week read Hebrews, because all of this stuff just comes to life in Hebrews. "For we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses, but was in all points tempted as we are, yet without sin. Therefore, let us come boldly with full access to the throne of grace, that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need." That's what we have. That's what all of this was foreshadowing. It was a real experience for them, but it was a limited experience. God's presence, I want to go back and quote the last part of the quote that I began with. God's presence in the tabernacle is a statement about God's intended presence in the entire world. The glory manifest there is to stream out into the larger world. As a kingdom of priests, they have a role of mediating this glory to the entire cosmos. So that was God's intention. Israel failed miserably. They were that royal priesthood, that holy nation. They were those who were to show forth the praises of the one true God, but they failed over and over and over again. But this privilege that was originally given to Israel in the overarching redemptive plan of God has been passed on to us through our great high priest, Jesus, the Son of God. So what God was intending with the tabernacle and the priesthood for that time was that they would be a light to the nations, that the nations would see this people that were unusual, but unusual in a very attractive way. And they would look and say, what people is there on earth that has a God who is so near to them as the children of Israel have? And what laws are these that they have? The people would just marvel and say, well, we want to be part of that. We want a God like that. That was the intention, but we know historically that was where the people failed. But God did not fail to keep his promises. And so that same thing is going on to this very day. And we, the church, the people of God, we have been given the privilege. And so Peter, he picks up on these ideas when he writes this in the second chapter of his first letter. Listen to what Peter says. He says, you, like living stones, are being built into a spiritual house to be a holy priesthood, offering spiritual sacrifices accepted to God, acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. So, see, Peter is going back and he's drawing on this language that we find throughout Exodus, throughout Leviticus, throughout Numbers, throughout Deuteronomy. Now, he says, you are like living stones, a spiritual house. So he's talking to the church collectively. We're like living stones. Each of us, we're a part of this structure, which is this temple to the Lord, this spiritual house. But remember, what did the tabernacle represent? It represented God's presence. Do you know that God intends that the church of Jesus Christ be a representative of his presence in a community? That's what God is doing. That is what God has desired to do. Wherever his people are, wherever we gather, we are to be a representation of God and a place where God's presence dwells within a community. So in other words, churches should be places where people could go, you know, I need to find God. I'm going to go there. Or maybe not, I need to find God. I'm going to go there. But maybe, man, I don't know, there's something over there that I just need to experience that. Or maybe, you know, I work next to this person and they're so different. I don't know what to make of it. And it's different. It's weird maybe, but there's something good about it. The presence of God. This is the idea. Just like it was with Israel, this is the idea for us. That we collectively, and of course, we're living stones, meaning there's the individual component we're all making up, the community. So each of the stones that make up the spiritual house, as well as the spiritual house itself, these are to be signposts to the world that God's presence is here. And then he goes on and he says, you are a holy priesthood offering spiritual sacrifices. Hebrews chapter 13 tells us that the sacrifices, now the priesthood, of course, had sacrifices that they offered. But now Peter is telling us that we're a priesthood. But we obviously don't offer animal sacrifices and things like that. What are the sacrifices that we offer? Well, Hebrews tells us that we offer the sacrifice of praise, the fruit of lips that give thanks and praise to his name. That's the sacrifices that we offer. So think about this. When we come together and when we lift our voices in song, or when we come together and we take some time to just, let's just thank the Lord, that is like when the ancient priest would offer sacrifices on the altar that would go up and be a sweet aroma to the Lord. So we have to remember that what we're doing is not just, oh, we're singing that song again, or we're just singing a few songs to get warmed up. We're not doing that. We're offering up the sacrifice of praise, the fruit of our lips. And also included in this would be intercession. For the priests were intercessors. They would intercede on the behalf of the people. And so this is what we do. Now, Peter goes on. This is, we're looking at chapter 2, verse 5. But in verse 9, he says this. He says, you are a chosen generation. He's taking these words right from Deuteronomy. You are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's own special possession, that you may show forth or declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. This is what we are. We are that royal priesthood. We are that holy nation, that chosen generation. And this is what we do. We declare the praises of him who called us out of darkness. We verbally announce. And of course, this is anything from just openly, publicly praising and thanking the Lord to sharing the gospel. Because as we share the gospel, what are we doing? We're proclaiming the praises of the one who called us out of darkness. We're telling the story of how we've been called out of darkness, and you can be called out of darkness. God is calling you out of darkness. John Stott said this about this passage. He said, the church is both a royal priesthood to offer spiritual sacrifices to God, which is worship, and a holy nation to spread abroad God's praises, which is witness. Every Christian congregation is called by God to be a worshiping, witnessing community. Indeed, each of these two duties necessarily involves the other. If we truly worship God, we find ourselves impelled to make him known to others in order that they may worship him too. The church has a double identity. We are a people who have been called out of the world to worship God and sent back into the world to witness and to serve. These are, in fact, two of the classical marks of the church. According to the first, the church is holy, called out to belong to God and to worship him. According to the second, the church is apostolic, sent out into the world on its mission. That's what we are. We are a royal priesthood. And the priests were the representatives of God to the people. And they would in turn represent the people back to God in the sense that they would intercede for them. And that's us. Worshiping. We come together to worship the Lord. And then we go out on the mission to witness and to see others brought in to the kingdom. And so in closing, the story of the people is the story of redemption through blood. That's a key component in the story of the people. Through the blood of the lamb in Egypt, and through the blood of the sacrifices in both the tabernacle and the temple in the wilderness and in the land. But as we have seen, those sacrifices could never truly take away sin. They could only cover it until the one to whom they pointed came. And now we are living post-incarnation. He came. But there's one more quote from Hebrews, which is actually a quote from Psalm 40. And the author of Hebrews, again, he says, he quotes, he puts these words actually in the mouth of Jesus. The author of Hebrews does. Sacrifice and offering. With burnt offerings and sin offerings, you were not pleased. Then I said, here I am. It is written about me in the scroll. I have come to do your will, O my God. Sacrifice and offering you did not desire. What does that mean? Well, God obviously desired it. He set it up. But you did not desire them ultimately because of their ineffectiveness. They could never do what God ultimately was wanting to do. They could never make the sinner pure enough for continual fellowship with him. That's why he says you did not desire, but you prepared a body for me. This is the way that that fellowship that God longed for, this is the way it would be accomplished by the body that God had prepared for Jesus, whose body we know was broken for us. And so it was on that evening, on that Passover, when Jesus said, with great desire, I have longed to eat this Passover with you. Why this Passover? Why the emphasis on this Passover? Because this is the Passover when all will be fulfilled. When all God's deep desire to have man fully reconciled to himself will be accomplished through the cross. And so Jesus, you know, takes the bread, breaks it. This is my body broken for you. Takes the cup, passes it around. This is my blood, the blood of the new covenant shed for the remission of sin.
Back to Basics Radio is offering a book titled The Powers of Darkness and the People of God by Pastor Ryan. With all the chaos, unrest, and uncertainty in our world, behind it all is an unseen realm where a spiritual battle is being waged. And this spiritual battle not only affects the world collectively, but even our lives individually. This month's book, The Powers of Darkness and the People of God by Pastor Brian, will give you an understanding of the battle that is raging behind the scenes. You will understand the enemy who is waging war against you, his tactics, and how you can be equipped to emerge victorious. As people of God, we must be aware of the spiritual battle we're all involved in, the sophisticated ways in which we're constantly being attacked, and the provision for victory we have in Jesus. If you want to be equipped for the spiritual battle we're engaged in, or to be able to help others become equipped, we encourage you to call us right now at 1-800-733-6443 or visit us online at backtobasicsradio.com to order The Powers of Darkness and the People of God by Pastor Brian. And when you give a gift to Back to Basics, we'll send you this book as our way to say thank you. We do appreciate your generous support of this ministry. We'd also like to remind you that all our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll continue next time with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we study together the Story of God series. Back to Basics is the listener-supported preaching and teaching ministry of Pastor Brian Broderson.